Hello, 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 everyone.
I am Pedro.
And I am Meredith.
And this is Gritty Reboot with my wife, very relaxed at this moment in time. That was the most relaxed intro you've ever given, and I like it. What are we covering today?
We are covering, let me check my notes.
Yeah, I love that. She had to be like, what, we're doing a podcast? We're covering a movie?
We're doing The Fog.
The Fog. And we were putzes, and we reviewed the 2005 version first.
Yeah, we were like, fuck it, we're going to do the worst movie first.
Because we had seen this before,
yeah.
But I'd seen it once.
Me too.
Once.
Me too.
I saw it in theater with Will. We were at a studio movie grill, and we tried to get as drunk as we could, as quick as we could during the film. And that's about the only thing I remember about it, other than, I mean, I'd seen Smallville with Tom Welling, so I knew he wasn't the finest thespian. I do like Tom Welling. I want to say that right now. I've listened to his podcast. So I'm a mark for Tom Welling. He seems like a really nice guy. He tells some really great stories. And he was apparently a really good dude on set for Smallville, which is apparently a fucking nightmare. So check out his podcast or Michael Rosenbaum's podcast. Rosenbaum does great interviews, really with a ton of actors and directors and figures in cult or genre pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Really does great work there. So check that out. We are no way affiliated with him. He doesn't know I exist. But either way, I'm just saying, he does good work. If you're looking for another show, just listen to this one instead. But if you really want another show, by all means, check out Rosenbaum or Tom Welling's podcast, which I forgot the name of. Like, I think it's like Going Deep with Rosenbaum.
Are they sucking your dick right now?
I'm just saying, we're going to play a clip from it in a minute, and I wanted to properly give it its due.
Mm.
I like to try to cite what the hell I'm talking about. I'm not trying to like steal other people's work and shit like that. Unless it's like generally known facts about a movie, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, God's ass here, 432 said off Reddit. You know, I'm not going to go
your quite in that. Your favorite handle.
Yeah, that was my favorite that I got to play with.
Yeah.
Friday the 13th, God's ass hair. Got all tangled up in that.
Yeah, it was fun. Those were the days.
I'm cutting all that. Friday the 13th's dead now, just like I am inside.
That's not true.
That's not true at all.
We got a love for this movie. No, we don't.
No, we really don't. We should have left this in the dustbin of history. Mm-hmm. We just should have canceled the show this week.
I got something on my radar. Looks like a fog bank, and it's moving straight toward us.
What kind of fog moves against the wind?
Oh, oh, oh.
All right, so Meredith, you got any trivia for 2005's The Fog?
I got a little something for you. Not much, because this movie sucks. Selma Blair did almost all of her own stunts. For her underwater scenes, she spent 12 hours in a water tank with only short surface breaks for 2 days straight.
Yeah, you know, actually, I read about, well, I didn't read about this. I watched some making of, some cast interviews and stuff like that. And she mentioned like what a tough shoot that was, but she didn't seem like pissed about it. She was just like, it helped her. Rah! Like, I'm fighting for my life. Like, really get into it, which doesn't show at all.
Yeah.
And I, by the way, I love Selma Blair.
I know.
If Selma Blair had a podcast, I'd be pimped for it right now.
I bet you would.
Oh, God.
You're a little podcast whore.
A little podcast whore.
All right. In between takes in Vancouver, press were granted access to the set. During Selma Blair's interview, director Rupert Wainwright made a joke she didn't like in response. Blair reached into her shirt, pulled out a rubber breast enhancement pad, and flung it across the crawl room.
Oh, man, I want footage of that. I didn't see that.
Deadpanning said, that's the Adrian Barbeau part of the role.
Yes, yeah, Selma Blair is known for perhaps her flat chest.
Yeah.
She's the exact opposite of Adrian Barbeau in that department, which we found kind of amusing when the movie began. Like, you can't help but sort of point that out.
Yeah. I like that. She's fiery.
Yeah. Oddly enough, I think she's, I usually like Selma Blair a lot. I guess I don't really like anybody in this movie, so.
No, everybody
yeah. sucks. Yeah, I really don't like anybody in this movie.
Yeah. Tom Welling's character, Nick Castle, is named after Nick Castle, the actor who played The Shape in John Carpenter's Halloween 1978.
Yeah, it's a nice little reference. That's all I can say. It's a nice reference. Yay.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's there, yeah.
Literally, there's no.
Yeah, I mean, some movies you're going to be like, did you know that he met his wife on this set? You know, like, yeah. You have a fun little story. Or Child's Play, we got that a couple weeks ago. We got to talk about they fell in love. That's a fun story to tell. Now we're just like, this is named after a guy who was in another movie.
I have two more facts, and they are all right.
Okay.
Fergie was attached to play Stevie Wayne before a last-minute conflict prevented her from her contract from closing.
Well, she had been bustier. So that's a positive.
Yeah.
Is that a bad thing for me to say? It's true, I guess. I mean, Selma Blair, we needed an actor. I remember Fergie from, I can't remember one half, the Robert Rodriguez half of Grindhouse, whatever Planet that's Terror. Called. Planet Terror. Thank you. She was in Planet Terror and she stunk. Yeah. So she was really bad. Like noticeably, like that wasn't a movie full of great performances. And I'm like, you're the worst in this, Fergie. And that's saying something because there's non-actors all over that movie.
Yeah.
Cheech Marin gets lines, you know, for Christ's sake. You know, I mean, there's a lot really, there's a lot of competition there. And she really just comes in underneath everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad it went with Selma Blair.
Actors considered for the role of Nick Castle, and you, some of these are doozies, David Boreanaz.
That could have worked, actually. That probably would have been better. Boreanaz is a significantly stronger actor than Tom Welling.
Jesse Metcalf.
Sure.
Matthew Davis.
Don't remember who that is.
Henry Cavill.
That would have been brilliant, but the movie also would have bombed, as everything Cavill's in does.
Adam Garcia, poor guy. Michael Cassidy.
I don't know.
Oliver Hudson.
I remember. Oh, that's the other Hudson.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the guy from Scream Queens.
Yeah.
The dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Peter Facinelli.
That guy's great.
Facinelli.
Facinelli's great too. Facinelli's great. I could have seen this with Facinelli.
Matthew Fox and Ben McKenzie were also considered for the role and met with the director, but ultimately didn't get the
part. Ben McKenzie, he's from the OC. He'd actually really done a great job with this one. I got to see him in a performance of Johnny Get Your Gun. In case you're why most people might remember that book is because that's the book that's referenced in Metallica's One, their classic song.
Mm-hmm.
And the music video has footage from the film adaptation playing through it. And anyway, he did a stage performance where I thought he was brilliant. I think he was a very, very good actor. He was in The OC where he had to carry a show that was kind of built on wackiness. It wasn't all that wacky. And then he was in Southland, which I thought was a really underrated cop drama, where he was the lead in that, too. And I thought he was great. And then I didn't really see him a whole lot after that, which is unfortunate, because I thought he was good. Even though I did see him in that trailer for that Pacino movie that we just watched. That, sadly, that was 20 years ago.
88 15 minutes? Years ago.
Yeah, 88 minutes.
Yeah.
Which I only spent 2 minutes watching the trailer, and I was done.
Yeah, no. It's
I've never seen 88 minutes, and I'll probably go to my grave never seeing 88 minutes.
I don't remember Al Pacino's wig being so bad.
Yeah, when I watch it, it's black as night.
Well, it also
it's black as night, and it's like a lion's mane above his head.
Well, in some scenes it's a lion's mane, and the other scenes it's all like perfectly coiffed. So I have no idea.
Yeah, like there's a scene where like wind is blowing, and you were like, there's a lot of like hairless goats. Now they don't have anything.
Yeah.
There's that have been shaved for whatever the hell that thing is on Al Pacino's head. So anyway, back to our coverage of 88 minutes. Oh, we're not doing that. We're doing
The Fog. We forgot we're doing a shittier movie.
Yes, we're doing. Yeah, it probably is a much better film than this one.
Yeah. So here we go. We start off with a fire on a ship, a raging fire. Guys escape on smaller boats. And then the fog engulfs the boat.
So before we get into this, I want to say, first off, where you can get a hold of us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was your job. And now you're fired. I want to say where you can get a hold of us. You can email us, grittyrebootcast@gmail.com. That's if you want to get any longer questions in. But if you just want to throw us a quick suggestion or just let us know we suck ass, you can do that by simply searching Gritty Reboot at TikTok or at Instagram, and that'll find us as well. YouTube as well. So if you want to watch an audio podcast, you're more than welcome to. We don't do cameras, so you're literally just gonna look at the cover art, but it's another way to listen to the show if you'd like to.
Yeah, we love it.
I did want to mention a couple things about how this all began. I did want to mention a couple things about we're talking about Rupert Wainwright. He did not direct anything else after this movie, and it was written by Cooper Lane, who is such a notable writer. He does not have a Wikipedia entry.
Okay.
So as far as I can tell, he didn't do anything but this movie. I don't know how the fuck that happened. I really don't. I have no idea. But I do know when they began this production, they only had 18 pages of script. And boy, does it feel that way. I will certainly say that because this movie is absolutely full of ideas and setups for things that never come. And we'll point them out as we go along. But Rupert Wainwright, the reason I wanted to bring him up is he directed another movie I absolutely loathe, Stigmata.
Oh, God.
You've seen Stigmata.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen Stigmata.
Unfortunately.
Gabriel Byrne, Rosanna Arquette, I think. Or Patricia Arquette? No, Rosanna. Debbie Arquette.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Debbie Arquette's in the movie. Sure. Whichever one. There's an Arquette in it, and I'm not going to click on it to see who's in it. But it's not worth it. Don't ever watch that movie. But he made that movie, which I really dislike. And he made another movie called Blank Check. Have you ever seen?
Yes.
So I think my grandfather bought Blank Check because it's like Home Alone.
No.
And it is not like that. But the movie is infamous today because at the end of the film, it features a kiss between an FBI agent. I want to say played by Angie Harmon, but I don't think that's who's in that movie. But she's clearly like a 30-year-old woman, and she kisses a 9-year-old boy or 11-year-old boy.
It's really fucked up.
I don't think anybody thought about it as weird at the time, you know?
Probably not.
You know, like, oh, make it an innocent peck. Kiss him just a little bit longer in case we need more. And the editor was like, yeah, let's go with the hot one. You know? That's basically, like, that's how I've heard her talk about the scene. I remember the actress mentioned, he's like, well, we did a few takes, and they went with the longest kiss for some reason. So it's just one of those things. That's the only notable thing about him. Once again, he directed an episode of Fear Itself after this, all he ever did. And I've seen the episode Echoes, and I can't remember a thing about it.
You're that kid's parents. Do you allow that to happen?
Yes.
Really?
No, of course not.
Yeah, right?
Of course not.
Now you'd have to tell me something like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and then I would have to say no.
Yeah.
All right.
I just wanted to mention the creators of this. Once again, we didn't really get top talent in this. And as we mentioned before, Tom Welling in it, Maggie Grace and Selma Blair really are our main leads here.
As I was saying, a fire rages. Fog engulfs a boat.
So we have our first real change. Because in the original film, they use a fire to draw them into the rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're killed because of the heavy fog.
Mm-hmm.
And the townspeople keep their money. In this one, they actively go over to them and murder them.
Yeah.
And light them on fire.
But we don't know that yet.
Yeah, we're just seeing this, but I'm just mentioning this is a change that's in here that really sounds like a positive change, right? Like, as I say it to you out loud, I'm like, that sounds kind of kick-ass. That's a better idea. And weirdly, the movie doesn't really do anything with this. There's a lot of, like, missed potential all over the film.
Yeah, this movie.
Once I found out they started with 18 pages of screenplay, I was like, yeah, it feels that way, man. Character motivations are dropped from scene to scene.
Believe it or not, I found a 10-star review.
I don't doubt it. There's got to be...
Stay tuned for that.
Yeah, there's got to be some Tom Welling simp out there who'll love anything he's in.
Yeah, it was a...
And it was me.
There were a few 10-star reviews. I was kind of surprised. I was like, this is going to be one of those 8-star reviews.
Well, you got to remember there's kids who watch this movie at like 7 years old and it scared the crap out of them.
Yeah, maybe.
Like if Maya saw like a crappy horror movie because she doesn't really want to watch them, it would scar her. Like if she went to, I don't know, stay at your brother's and he put on something like that, like she would be scared by it without realizing it's schlock and garbage.
Yeah.
And she would grow up always appreciating this, you know, weird movie. Like the same way I like Toby Hooper's Invaders from Mars, even though I know it's awful, but my grandfather showed it to me when he shouldn't have. And so it stuck with me for years. Like I watched that when I was like 5 or maybe 4.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, back to my psychological trauma of the podcast. Oh, we're not doing it.
A hand reaches out of the water and grabs one of the men. And then we go to Stevie, who's broadcasting on the radio. And Stevie is the lighthouse radio DJ.
Yeah, as we mentioned before, this was the role made famous by Adrienne Barbeau, or just performed by her, I guess. She seems like a solid choice for the role, but I don't think she's really good here. I would feel like she didn't give a shit, but nothing about her time on set says that.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like she had a really good time making this film, and it seems like she liked the director, and nobody really complained about him. If anything, I mean, like I said, it's not well directed, but this is maybe the worst screenplay we're ever going to cover. And I've said that a lot, and this is the new holder of that title. But yeah, so she is the radio DJ, and it's less impactful than the original film.
We have a couple of town officials speaking about a statue, and it's the town's founders. And apparently some glasses are in the wrong spot, and who held this?
Yeah, they're upset about the statue isn't correct. So
yeah.
So in the original film, this was like the 100-year anniversary, I do believe, the centennial.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a lot of sense for the pirates to return.
Yeah.
If you understand the logic of ghost stories and horror movies, 100 years, 10 years to the night, that's when that kind of shit happens. This would be 134 years, I think, which, true, it is an anniversary, or it could be the 135th, I'm not really certain, but I do believe it's 134 years. it's not really a thing, you know. Yeah. I don't know why they just couldn't change the date so it could be 100 years. Instead, we have to invent another reason that comes up in a minute. Not that it really matters, because the storyline between the town founders is downplayed significantly from what it was in the original film. Like, the Janet Leigh character here is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So we see her for 2 scenes, and then she gets sucked out a window.
Yeah. A bunch of guys are fishing. They anchor up and get snagged on something, and it's a sack.
Yeah, so like a couple guys, our lead characters in the film, or our lead character, he's entertaining these fishermen and he's trying to upsell them on how great the fishing experience is out here at Antonio Bay. I was going to say Antonio Banderas, at Antonio Bay. And his assistant, Spooner. I had to look up his name.
I was like, Schooner?
Yeah, because I wanted to say Schooner. And I was like, no, that's the, what's it called, from the drugs from Skyrim. Anyway. He goes up to the top of the thing and he starts trying to bring in that anchor. And this is the inciting incident that begins everything. And Spooner is a new added character. He is comic relief and he's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
He is the worst performance in the movie, the worst character in this film.
Yeah, he's a nothing character.
Yeah, there's nothing to him other than I'm here to provide.
He's the best friend.
Yeah, I'm here to be the token black guy best friend in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the only black character in this film? That's a yes, I think.
So.
Yeah. I think this is a mostly white film.
Yeah.
I'm not judging it for that or anything like that. I just want to mention he is the only black guy in the movie.
We white people love our
Yeah. Do you want to cast any other non-whites? Like, screw it. That's one role. That's all anybody else needs.
That's
multicultural. That's all, nothing but white faces. Yeah, because even like the homeless guy's a white guy. Jesus Christ, we can't even get work in Antonio Bay as homeless people or bums.
Well, it is 2005.
We can't even be leper pirates in this movie. Good Lord.
Well, like I said, they get snagged on an evil sack.
I mean, that's all it is. They tear the sack and they let the watch out.
An old brush and a pocket watch fall.
Yeah, unleashes the curse. This unleashes the curse, I suppose. Because this is the only explanation we get. It's stupid if you think about it. It's really stupid. I shouldn't have thought about this movie.
Nick and Spooner chat about the boat and repairing the clutch and women and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. So first of all, they talk about him and Stevie, right?
Yeah.
This is where this gets introduced. We never, ever do anything with this.
No, it's weird.
Like, he runs into Stevie, I think, in a later scene and before all the shit goes down. And they just kind of acknowledge each other. Like, there's nothing there at all. And it mentions like, oh, you know, a love triangle possibly. No. It's nothing. This movie's written like WWE storylines like 10 years ago, where you just kind of introduce an element. Oh, that'll be cool when they pay that off. Nah. This whole movie is anti-Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
And I'll put, because we have anti-Chekhov's triangle love story, and then we have anti-Chekhov's freezer of salvation later on.
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. It's such a weird thing. They can't go in the freezer. Oh, good. So that's where the finale's at, right? Nope. Never brought up again. Yeah, I'll talk when we get there, but holy shit. I fucking hate this movie. Nick, continue on.
Nick gives some shit to the man and woman who erected the statue. So that's the
Crazy.
Mayor and the, I guess like a councilman of some sort, a town councilman.
Yeah. I think a councilman.
She's the mother of
Maggie Grace's character. Yeah. They're a character name. So fuck that shit. Yeah. This movie isn't worth me remembering everybody's fucking character.
I'll figure it out. I think I wrote it down somewhere.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know who Andy Barkley is because he's a fun character. I don't give a shit about who these people are.
A man with a metal detector finds an old pocket watch. Same one.
Yeah. Early. Man, you delivered that line with more gusto than Selma Blair does in this movie. So I'll give you that. You could be a great radio DJ over a mostly white Northeastern or Northwestern town.
I'm just trying to add some flair to this. The same one from earlier. So we saw the same pocket watch from earlier.
It washed ashore in like 4 or 5 hours. So the ghost just boogied them to the shore, basically.
Yeah. And then you see a fog rolling in and it's a dead arm.
Bones over there. It's I mean, it's just a little reveal. There's nothing to it.
The homeless guy or whoever he is, he finds his dog dead.
Yeah, so they do kill a dog in the movie. This is the first death.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but the pirates kill a dog.
Yeah.
I guess they're not really pirates.
Not really. They're lepers.
They're lepers. They're just ghost lepers.
That's what I call
they're
them.
Ghost lepers.
I think in my notes.
That's better than ghost pirates.
Lepers.
Anyway, they had leprosy in the other one too. Anyway.
Stevie, the light.
They burned the dog, right?
I didn't write down.
So okay, yeah, I think the dog is burnt. Because I was going to mention that, like, because, well, I mean, this is fine, and I think the movie's holding to a logic at this point, because they were burnt to death. So them using fire is fine. But I don't know why they're in with the fog.
I don't either.
Yeah, the fog isn't part of their origin. It wasn't foggy that night. They were fucking burnt to death. The fog has nothing to do with this.
It's not like there's spooky stories out there where dead ride on fog, you know, for it to be logical in some way.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But the fog is like a big part of this, and it's only because it was in the original movie. They changed the story to where that doesn't really mean anything anymore. Mm-mm. You know what I mean? Everything should be fire-based and fire-related, which would have been fine, but you can't call it the fog then.
Yeah.
You gotta call it, I don't know.
The fire.
And Smokey's Antonio Bay. No?
The fire within.
The fire within. I like it. We should make a whole new movie.
Okay. We're back with Stevie at the lighthouse, and she's the radio personality.
Yeah, that's all she is. I think she's, I don't know, she's just not as interesting a character, which is odd.
No.
I think this was an easy thing to port over the DJ from one to the next. And they have her make a narrative decision that I think is better than what's in the original film, but they don't do anything with it, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And I'll get to it when we get there.
Nick picks up an old fling, and it's Elizabeth.
So this is a really weird scene. He's just driving, and there's this woman in silhouette, and he just pulls over to pick her up, and she teases him that he's going the wrong way if he's going to pick her up. He comes around in a very flirtatious way, or flirtatious for Tom Welling.
Mm-hmm.
He makes another attempt to pick her up and steps forward, and it's revealed to be
his girlfriend.
His ex.
Yeah.
And they give each other shit, because she gives him shit about, oh, you've already moved on. He's like, no. He's weirdly evasive about it, and this doesn't play into anything. Which leads you to believe that there was some love story, love triangle element that was in this movie that they got rid of. Because he's clearly being deceitful.
Well, out of all of this, they just started making out.
Yeah, and then she immediately throws away all this information, gets in the car, and starts just cuddling right next to
him. Yeah,
they're immediately ridiculous. Back together. Like, just from point A to point B.
That's how we were, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they should have just, you know, if they were going to do that, then just have them have 1 minute of an argument while they're in the car, and then cut to them back at his place as they're done having sex like an hour later.
Yeah.
To imply that they immediately, once they got a chance to get out of the vehicle, just got down to business.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's what they do in the other movie, because that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they have sex later, but like, it doesn't matter, you know? It's a very strange way to introduce a character and have it come together. It's like, this wasn't written by a human.
Yeah.
You know?
Spooner throws a party on the boat, and girls are included. The girls love partying on boats, right?
They love partying on old stinking fishing boats.
Yeah.
They love just dancing around PG-13 style.
Yeah.
They can't get their tits out because it's PG-13 and that's not allowed. And I mean, it's a scene, I guess. It's not entirely functional. Like I said, I don't know why these girls would go out to party with these guys on this boat in this moment in time.
A bum comes up on Elizabeth, and it's the man that found the pocket watch, and he acts real weird.
He does. He's like the shadiest motherfucker who ever lived.
And then leaves after Nick comes back.
But he gives her the watch.
Yeah.
And the watch is, I guess, what sets the curse in motion. So here's what the curse needed. So the curse needed someone to break the sack.
Yeah.
And once the evil came out of the sack, it needed the ghost to pick up these evil items and curry them over to the shore as quickly as possible to make it there for the anniversary, which is completely unrelated.
And then leave his arm.
Don't forget, anniversary, unrelated.
Yeah.
Just a wild coinkydink. They're going to throw that there, throw his arm, and then they're going to take off because they want to make sure the camera guy's got a scared to cut on. You know, the editor's got a nice place to make a good hard cut. And not only that, they'll need someone to pick it up who is going to run into the only person that could jumpstart the curse.
Yeah.
That's a lot of things that have to go right if you really think about it.
Yeah.
And you know what? 100% believable. Greatest movie ever made. I want to thank you again, Cooper Sheridan. That's probably not the guy's name who wrote it, but who gives a shit?
Cooper Sheridan.
What's his name? It's Cooper Lane. Cooper Lane.
Cooper Sorry. Lane.
Oh, my apologies to all Cooper Sheridans out there.
All right. Dan calls Stevie from the weather station, and he's
flirty,
flirtatious, yeah. Like he was in the original.
This is almost a fun scene with a little humanity in it.
Yeah.
He makes a nice joke about being a big, tall 6'5", 6'6" guy, and he's only 5'9".
He tells her about the fog. She broadcasts it.
Yeah. What kind of fog moves against the wind? Evil fog?
Evil fog. There's an evil sack. There's an evil fog.
There's a lot of evil stuff in this movie. Yeah. It's an evil screenwriter.
We're back with Spooner on the boat. Sean, the other guy that's with him, which I thought was originally Andrew, but it's Sean.
Oh, okay.
Makes a call to the shore. The girls come into the...
Yeah, because the radio begins to get kind of staticky, but they hear over the radio about the fog coming in. They're like, what fucking fog?
Yeah.
And then they immediately cut to, oh my God, where'd that fog come from?
The fog engulfs the boat as Spooner is outside. The fog sweeps across the town. You see a shot of the town.
And this is CG fog. There's no real way to... Oh, God. There's a few times they use practical fog, but I want to say like 90% of this fog is CG. And I went back and like skimmed through the movie at quadruple speed earlier just to be like, is that like a fog machine there? And like, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have a fog machine even around set. Like, they're like, we'll do it all digitally. It'll be great. And it looks terrible.
Yeah.
It looks terrible as it rolls in. It doesn't look realistic at all. It feels like a PS3 effect, not PS2, a PS3 effect's coming at them. So a little textured, but it's just very phony.
Mm-hmm. And then Nick and Elizabeth, they run into the priest who...
Major character in the original film.
Yeah.
And he is just a drunk background player in this film.
Yeah, who cares, right?
Yeah.
He's disoriented from being all drunk, but he ends up eventually going away.
Yeah, so I wanted to play a little clip here from Tom Welling to talk about this, because you know, we wanted to mention here that Father Robert Malone is, I believe, who that is. And the Malones are a big part of like the original story that's played by Tom Holbrook in the other film, yeah. Three-time Oscar nominee. And he's the one who uncovers the journal and finds out about the backstory of the town. So that character doesn't do that in this one. He does pretty much nothing. And Tom Welling felt this about what was really going on with the writing of this story and how it came to pass. So sort of trying to make the movie more marketable and wider really cost them something.
I got slapped in the face. I did this horror movie that was horrible, and it was all based on the fear of God. And it was a remake of an earlier John Carpenter movie, and it's called The Fog, if anybody wants to check it out. Please don't. And we're like in the middle of shooting this redo, and they're taking the fear of God out of it. They're taking everything that made the first one scary out of it. And I'm just, because they want to appeal to more of a mass, and it didn't work. I'll tell you that, because it wasn't scary.
Well, that's
and
because
at the end of the day, if a horror movie's not scary, then you're not going to do well.
And he's really hit it on the head there. And Tom Welling goes on. You can tell he's not happy about how this movie turned out. You can tell he really loves the original film and really despises the remake he's in.
Yeah.
But yeah, this I didn't want to mention that because this religion part is played down and this part is almost nothing in this movie. But continue on.
We're back with the boat and things start exploding inside the cabin for no fucking reason.
Yeah, that's right. The fog can make things explode, which it does in the other movie. It does make shit explode, so that's fine.
Glass.
Well, it makes glass break in the other film. It doesn't make just...
Yeah.
So
a bunch of just weird stuff starts happening. Everybody starts freaking out. Then we get fog POV.
That's right. We do have fog POV. I mentioned this at the time. We actually see from the fog's perspective.
Yeah.
We know.
We needed to know.
Yeah.
The two girls are left in the cabin. Something knocks. All you see is the girl's handprint. And then there's a bunch of voices. And then we're going outside with Spooner. And then someone throws one of the dead girls through the cabin window.
So the ghosts really cannot be seen. They just fly through these windows.
Yeah. Another something slings the knife after Spooner and end up killing Sean. All you hear is Spooner screaming. So yeah, we think he's dead.
We cut away in a cut that leads you to believe that he's dead.
Yeah.
I did want to mention one positive thing about this film, and that's when the ship comes rolling in. And I think that's a really good looking shot. I think that rivals what was done in the original film. That is the literal one thing I can throw a compliment on in this film, and I wanted to be sure to mention it here. I really love that shot of Spooner looking up and seeing the ship come in through the fog with the ghosts on it.
Very good.
Yeah, and that's about the only real positive 2.5 seconds of that shot.
No, you're right. It's a good shot.
Yeah, it really is a good shot. It's not fair to them. They're going up against Dean Cundey.
And then we're with Elizabeth. She goes home to her mom, who is, like I said, the town official of some sort. And she is being a real bitch.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Worst mother ever.
Yeah, she literally just shows up to be, like, the worst version of herself that she could possibly be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's all this person is. I'm here to be an antagonist. I'm going to antagonize you, and I'm going to leave the plot. Once again, a very basic scene that is just there to serve one purpose. This movie's so surface level.
We're back with Nick, and he could give a shit that his vehicle is not street legal with its fucking windshield out.
Yeah, yeah. When they have all the windows bust out, they never really do anything about like that problem. So he just has his fucking, like the wind just slamming right into them. Because it shows all that glass break, so.
Elizabeth and Nick end up together, and there's a shower sex scene.
There's a PG-13 CW-friendly shower sex. It would have been the WB, pardon me.
Several sexy, drippy kisses.
Yeah, very wet, sopping, wet kisses. Lots of dirty, wet calves and ankles are shown.
Yeah, some blurry rain water or shower water.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Sexy.
Yeah, it's a very blurry door that you see some thrusting, perhaps.
Maybe a little bit of thrusting.
You could be having heartburn in there. We don't know.
They are sleeping in bed when Elizabeth wakes up from a nightmare after three knocks.
Yeah, so she's having these nightmare flashbacks that really occur throughout the film, and they get ever annoying as the movie continues on.
Real stupid.
Yeah, they just keep on going and keep on going, and they're showing us, but they're showing us things we don't really understand. They're just showing us flashes and glimpses until we finally get the reveal later in the movie. There's so much build up to the reveal. Everybody knows, and like it's not necessarily hidden by the plot.
Elizabeth does some research about the symbol she found in the pocket watch.
See?
The fog messes with her computer.
Somehow. For some reason, yeah. It says Dane on it, right?
Yeah.
I guess the name of the ship, the Dane so-and-so.
Whilst in her underwear, she hears some bangs and sees some footsteps. Chains are rattling. She goes outside in her underwear for some reason.
Yeah, we get a Texas Chainsaw Massacre style ass shot.
Yeah. She sees some footprints. The fog rolls in. More ugly CG fog.
Yeah.
And then Nick comes to get her.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's just a scene for scares, and so you can see her ass.
Mm-hmm.
Her ass was in every trailer for this film.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's not even a great ass.
Yeah. He had a huge ass! Sorry, I couldn't help it.
Andy is on the beach and finds an old hairbrush. Andy is Stevie's son, just in case you didn't know that.
Yeah. We didn't introduce her son earlier.
Did
we pass the underwear scene?
We're here.
Oh, we're here at the underwear scene. Okay.
Stevie is also in her underwear, but she's around her son.
Now, I do want to give the director a little credit. There is not a titillating shot of her in this scene. She is just waking up and in her underwear.
She scrubs some barnacles off the brush and finds the same symbol that was on the pocket watch Elizabeth found.
Yeah.
Elizabeth goes to the town museum ran by her bitch mom for a book. She finds a symbol that was on the brush and pocket watch.
Yeah, so more we have a scene of research again.
Yeah.
There's so much going in to figure out what's going on in this plot when we've kind of already know. Like, you can't really do that same twist a second time.
Yeah.
Even in a remake, like, it's tough to really get away with that. Especially if the movie is well known.
And the old
man. I mean, even divorcing yourself from the previous film, there are ghosts killing people. We've seen that. We know something's up, right?
Yeah.
We don't need to pussyfoot around. Where could this silver belong to? It's like moving along, movie. What the fuck? So, yes, we had a scene of research in a library. These are thrilling back in the O's.
An old man, a guy with like a gash on his face of some sort.
It's leprosy.
Yeah. We know that now.
It's leprosy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go anywhere.
It gets worse.
It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere. No big deal. No big deal.
Old man tells Elizabeth about leprosy and some historical exposition. Nick comes to get her. Nick goes out in a boat to find Spooner and the seagrass. He gets to the boat and no one is there. And the boat is all smashed up. Nick finds Sean and his eyes are sewn shut. Elizabeth finds the other bodies caught in a net and stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, so it's been a bad day for them. They find a couple bodies.
Elizabeth goes walking around still yet some more.
Yeah.
And finds Spooner in a cooler.
So, yeah, I'd mentioned that at the time. I was like, well, he doesn't know if Spooner did this or if there's somebody else on the boat. Probably just shouldn't let her walk around. But they open the freezer and they find Spooner in there who you believe is dead. He comes back to life. He didn't die. And so they get him back to land and get him out of there. And he delivers a message to Nick telling him they couldn't get in the freezer. The freezer stopped them. They couldn't get in with the cold. And we never pick that up again.
Yeah, like doesn't matter.
Yeah, because you draw attention to it. As an audience, you are trained when someone tells you something about a monster. That's his weakness. It's going to play into something later. And it never really does. It bleeds of something that was in this script that they dropped at a certain point, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Sadly. It would have been a more interesting movie, but we get this instead.
We see them bag up Sean's body.
Mm-hmm.
They want to lock up Spooner.
Which makes sense, all the sense in the world. Yeah, he's the only person alive when three people have been killed.
We get another scene where Dan sends Stevie a webcam, which he's a bit strong in his advances.
Yeah, he sends her a webcam because basically he just wants to whip it out. He's hoping to see some of Blair's flatness.
Yeah.
I guess you could show him her ass. Listen, we're not talking about who's going to sex with on this. But that's what he's hoping for. He's going to hope to see an ass cheek.
Elizabeth sees a video. We're just going back and forth. It's just the way the movie is.
There's a lot of cross-cutting here, one scene to another scene.
It's just all quick. Elizabeth sees a video of what happened on the boat. She doesn't want to give that to the police for some reason.
Yeah, so we have this exonerating evidence here. And the first thing should be, because Tom Williams' character even says something about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, we should probably give that to the cops because our buddy's in jail right now. We got some serious shit going down.
Yeah, she could care less.
Yeah, it's just not.
Doesn't even register with her.
It doesn't. She completely ignores it.
Yeah.
Because she is the 100% lead character in this movie. She has absorbed four other characters into herself. Like, she took all the priest storyline, and now she's also the ghost wife as well.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know about that yet, but we're getting hints at it.
We're getting there.
Well, that's what all the flashbacks are for. Flashbacks for ghost wife.
She's dreaming.
It's already at this point. It's already hitting us, and I hate it.
She falls in the water and drops all the evidence.
Yeah, she just drops the camera, never looks for it. The second she comes up and puts her hand into it, and by the way, she's drowning in like what? It looks like a 4-foot pool.
Yeah.
It's not very big.
She keeps getting wrapped up in like seaweed and all kinds of
She's just selling any possible thing like a pro wrestler. Like, oh, seaweed. Oh, a tiny net. Oh, God, a starfish. Like all this stuff is like, I can't swim and do all these things. So she milks her way over to the wall, and then she hits it, and it gives way, and she finds the journal that Hal Holbrook found in the original film.
Yeah.
So she has that. She is now going to continue to research this phenomena.
Things start going nuts at the radio station. The breasts, I'm sorry. It sounded like I said the breasts.
Yeah, the breasts. Selma Blair's heaving bosom.
The brush heats up and catches fire.
Yeah.
She puts the fire out and finds symbols burned into the wall. Stevie calls Andy and acts real weird and tells him to not go down to the beach without her. He does anyways.
Which I did like. Within like 5 seconds, he's like, can I go down to the beach? Yeah. He's gone.
Yeah.
That's fine. I like that. It's fine.
Elizabeth goes for Father Malone, but he's not there. He comes out of a mausoleum that's been painted. Which we're led to believe that it was him that painted it because he's got shit on his hands.
Yeah, yeah, his hands are red.
So he's all jacked up in the head.
Yeah, because he's just portrayed as a hopeless drunk.
Father acts real sketchy and leaves Elizabeth in the lurch.
I know there can be a shortage of priests, but I'm pretty sure wandering around town pissed drunk all the time is a good way to get fired.
Yeah, but I'm sure there's so many freaking small towns that have a priest just like that, and everybody just lets it go.
I don't know, man. That'd be a real tough thing to do. If there's one pious guy there, he won't stand for it. He'd call the archdiocese.
You can do that?
Fuck yeah, you can do that. Fuck yeah, you can. For drinking? Sure. If he was touching a kid, they'd probably just move him. But if you were, like, pissed drunk and, like, if you were missing services and the church is falling into disrepair, absolutely you can get fired. Yeah. They moved that church from my old hometown because his Indian accent was too strong. So you can get you tossed for any reason.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's...
Hey, my dad liked the priest. He did. He didn't like the one that came after that.
Wow. Okay. She goes to try to talk to Nick at the hospital, but he's preoccupied with Spooner. So she goes to the morgue and looks at the dead bodies.
To be fair, the cops are grilling Spooner about the murder. And he's like, hey, listen, I don't have time for this ghost stuff. My buddy might go to prison. Can you fuck off for like 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Like, he's super nice about it. But that's the gist of that whole scene. She's like, I've got some evidence that this silver could be connected to this thing that occurred 20 years ago. It's like, who gives a fuck? All right. Yeah. My buddy's going to go to jail.
While she's in the morgue and looking at all the dead bodies, Sean's corpse gets up and gets real close and says, blood for blood.
Blood for blood. So this is obviously just like the scene in the original where we have a zombie arise, except he says blood for blood this time instead of just writing three on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the other scene, except not as good. Yeah. Not as interesting. It's par for the course at this point. More inferior remake stuff.
Elizabeth gets real stupid and talks about her dream and the ledger and how she lost the evidence to exonerate his friend. Elizabeth notices the old pics on the wall and how the town became wealthy overnight. All this happens, and once again, she could give a shit about Sooner.
Yeah.
She tells him all this, and he's like expecting him to be all happy about it. And yeah. He's basically like, what the fuck?
There's weirdly a different movie here where he's like, what? Hey, listen, this is important. We need to focus on this. And she's just like, but there's history in this town that's a foul and rotten. Like, what? I don't have time for a conspiracy. To be fair, I do like the way that is played by him, because he would, that's fucking realistic. She's like, what? You're involved in some fucking murder mystery, and I'm trying not to get my best friend in fucking jail.
Metal detector dude is back on the beach. He finds a table set and an old chandelier on the beach. So he's hallucinating. His metal detector detects something, and it's a rope. I didn't know detectors could detect.
Yeah, he found ropes. Well, it could be a metal rope from the 1800s.
Could it?
Oh, yeah. They had metal ropes all the time.
That doesn't seem
proper. Columbus sailed the seven seas on a metal rope.
You don't know.
Oh, I know. I'm an aquatic historian.
You're an aquatic rogue historian.
Yeah, I'm an aquatic rogue historian.
Rope.
I'm also a rogue historian. Thanks for punching that P. Rope.
You can have fun with that later. He follows the rope out to sea. He gets caught up in all the ropes.
Heads out.
And then the fog appears and makes him disappear. Ooh.
I feel like once the rope went in the water, you're like, well, that's the end of that. But he just goes in anyway.
Yeah.
He has to die. So he dies, I guess. We don't see him again. So we're just assuming he's
dead. Andy watches this whole thing happen. And then the fog ends up chasing Andy to the house. The weird fan noise sounds to indicate the fog's rolling in happens.
Yeah. So the CG fog surrounds that house and it looks okay as it covers like all the windows, I guess.
Yeah. Dan and Stevie chat about the fog, and then the weather station goes out. Someone knocks at the door and Dan goes to answer it, but no one is there.
Ooh.
He goes outside and sees a ghost burst into flames after dropping his oil lantern and gets thrown across the room.
Yeah, so there's one really nice shot of his eyeball as, like, the flames engulf him. And to be fair, if you saw a ghost and dropped your lantern, it could happen.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with, like, that's how he died. Like, he just turned around and go, what the fuck? And just dropped his lantern a second. A ghost scared the shit out of him. That's fine. He throws him in there, burns to death. This death is functional. And I don't believe there was a death of the weather
guy. Why is he using a oil lantern?
So he can burn to death.
Is it just, like, 1863 or something?
Yeah. He said, let me go get my old oil lantern.
That's ridiculous.
I wish there'd have been
2005.
I wish there'd have been one moment where he'd have just said, man, there's one thing I love. It's oil lanterns. Like, they could have set one thing up. Instead, I'm waiting for the fog to not be able to get into a freezer while this guy's throwing oil lanterns all over the goddamn movie.
God. Well, Stevie frantically calls Andy after she witnesses Dan being murdered.
You can buy an oil lantern, by the way, still. I do want to defend that.
Do they?
Yeah, you can buy that at Walmart.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I remember when I was going to buy a lantern, I was like, oh, she can get an oil one. So they do have them, but you are right. It's very peculiar. He would just have a goddamn oil lantern, not a flashlight.
Yeah. Or even an LED lantern.
Well, it's 2005.
Yeah, I know, but.
2005. They didn't have that then. Mm. Yeah, you had to pump up like a. Just like a regular light. Remember that? You had to like turn it. That was the only LEDs they had. You can't use that.
Stevie frantically calls Andy, but gets knocked out. The power goes out everywhere, even at the commencement ceremony downtown.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of crazy stuff. The fog sort of flashes through the town. All the power's lost.
Stevie makes a plea over the radio for someone to go check on her son. Nick hears her call. Stevie hops in the car. And then we get a flashback.
So this is a change from the original film. Stevie leaves the booth.
Yeah.
And Stevie never does because she believes she has to keep the town safe.
Mm-hmm. Which I like better.
I think narratively as a mother, it makes more sense that she would try to go find her son. However, I can certainly see that we lose the element of her like doing the play-by-play up top and letting people know where the fog is rolling in and stuff like that. It puts her in the action and it doesn't lead to much, sadly. You know, it's not like she has a great connection with her son that makes me want to see them reunited. It's just something that happens. That's not quite the same. So
we get a flashback and people with leprosy are on a ship. And then Stevie frantically tries to call even through nothing even though nothing works, even though
she knows nothing works, she still tries to call.
She still tries to make a fucking call. Andy's babysitter gets insta-leprosy and withers away after seeing the fog in her dishes and a hand grab her arm.
Okay, so I think I was wrong about that. I think she just burns to death.
Does she?
Yeah, I think that's all it is. She just gets burns on her with no fire.
Yeah, there's no fire.
Yeah, because I watched the death again earlier, and like the burns, it looks like burns across her body. When she falls down, smoke is coming out of her. So I was like, okay, I don't think it's insta-leprosy. I think this was her burning up is what it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So that does tie into a little bit of like the fire that was a part of them, but she's the only person that they touch and kill this way. And other people they touch can survive.
Fog engulfs. Shut up.
You had to build up to that word. Like, fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fog engulfs Stevie's car. Her engine won't start. Someone hits her car and she goes tumbling into the water.
So we get an accident. This is what we talked about earlier. There's some nice underwater stuff here.
Yeah, somebody hits her car like that and like doesn't stop.
Yeah, well, he can't stop. The fog took everything over. He can't see. He can't see out there.
He's like, you could feel things, bitch.
Yeah.
She tries to escape from drowning, but a ghost grabs her and pulls her down.
The ghost looked terrible. We haven't talked about that, but the CG ghosts that we're starting to be able to see at this point in the movie,
yeah,
they look like rejects from The Frighteners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we're talking about mid-90s CG. Evelyn's CG's so bad.
Andy finds the babysitter's corpse and runs and hides. Ghosts knock on his door. It breaks through and Nick grabs him through the window.
Yeah, Nick saves him just in the nick of time.
They get to the truck and ram through a ghost, which spreads mud on his windshield.
Yeah, it explodes into shit.
Yeah.
All over the windshield. I'm like, what? What? You can't just tell me they're corporeal.
Yeah, he's
all
corporeal.
Of a sudden? No, it can't be. Come on. So he explodes. Like, I know, like, they need to be let in to doors and stuff like that, but the fog just comes under the door, right? That's what they were showing. Like, they were going to get in no matter what. So you're telling me this is their one weakness? Fucking GMCs? That's the one thing they can't defend against? Oh, God, moving vehicles. My only weakness. How did you know?
Ridiculous.
So I don't even know if that pirate's dead, but we'll throw him on the list. He's dead. Poop pirate.
Schooner goes to steal a boat and sees a ghost schooner. Nick and company ram a boat. And then we get another flashback where the founders betray the leprosy people.
Yeah. You can just call them lepers. you just call them leper. I think that's the term they prefer, lepers, and the leprosy people. That sounds like they're a foundation that helps fight for leprosy or against leprosy.
Perfect.
they're not championing the rights of leprosy. Anyway, so we get this, and this scene isn't bad. It's a little much, but it isn't bad.
Yeah.
So I do want to mention it's in decent, you know, lighting up a ship and killing some people and stuff like that. Just because they want to steal their money and not have them live in their town.
Elizabeth calls for Nick in the fog and they find each other. Aww.
It's beautiful. It's not.
The guy with a fucked up face goes off to find his dogs.
And his face is super fucked up now.
Yeah.
Like he super has leprosy on his face.
Yeah.
And obviously that's going to be our tease for the sequel. Oh, what? We never see him again?
No.
That's right. We never see him again.
Stevie reunites with her son and they all take solace in the museum where everybody's held up basically from the town meeting and the ceremony.
Yeah, everyone's going to hole up there.
We get another flashback, and it's the captain's leprosy wife. Looks just like Elizabeth.
Yeah, so that's the final reveal as we head into the final action sequence.
Then we see the assholes burn the leprosy people all for their gold.
Yeah.
You can hear their screams.
Yeah, so this is kind of a cool scene. The flashbacks pay off for like 1 minute long sequence later on. It's not worth it for the 18 flashbacks that we get to see throughout the movie and dream sequences.
The captain and Elizabeth drowned, which prompts Pete to say, you lose.
Sure.
All right, let me do that again. I have a note inside of a note.
Okay.
Excuse me.
I was like, what?
Okay.
Okay. A note inside a note.
Captain and Elizabeth drowned, basically. We see them drown.
Yeah.
You were telling me something about how leprosy people or lepers.
I They do prefer lepers, yes.
Lose their buoyancy. And I had no idea that that was a thing.
No, it's not.
It's not?
No, it's not. They don't lose their buoyancy.
Oh, shit. I believe you.
Why did she write that? Why would it change how buoyant they are?
I don't know.
No, I'm sorry.
See, I don't know when you're kidding sometimes.
I thought you said leprosy makes you less buoyant, so of course they. I'm assuming it's their clothes.
I was like, "That's a cool."
You're like,
fact.
"Wow, shit!" I'll write that down. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll win Jeopardy one day with that.
Anyways, Spooner ends up at the museum. The priest is
everybody
there too.
Just gets there. Yeah,
the fog is everywhere.
Everyone's rushing to get to the finale of this film.
Oh, the mayor and Mommy Dearest are all there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The fucked up face guy gets thrown through the museum window.
Oh, we do see him as he dies.
Paintings start melting. Statues start melting. Weird stuff starts happening. They burn some stuff.
So that it fits, I guess.
I guess it's burned. But why don't you put a little fire on it so that I know you're fucking burning, not melting?
Because they didn't have money for fire effects. They spent it all on their fog.
I guess.
It doesn't fit the theme of the movie anymore.
Mommy Dearest gets plucked through the window.
Yeah, she just like whoosh, yanked out of there. No death or anything like that. Just pulled out.
The ghosts come for Father Malone.
This isn't bad, where they encircle him with glass and then glass slowly stab him.
Yeah, I actually like that too.
Yeah, visually, this is the best sequence of the film, besides the shot of the one shot of the Elizabeth Dane coming in. Other than that, that's it.
The mayor gets thrown about and thrown outside, where he's manhandled further. He gets manhandled all the way to the graveyard, and this is where all the ghosts are, and they surround him. The ghost hands the mayor a contract, which bursts into flames, catching the mayor and burning him to death.
Yeah, represent their violated contract. We got it.
Elizabeth is captivated by all of this, and she stays, and she goes towards the ghost leader, who is the captain.
The captain.
He kisses her. Then they spin around in a ghost form. She joins them, and they all disappear. It's all really fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, so like I said, she kisses William Blake, and then she becomes a ghost wife. Apparently, she was always supposed to be that. And I like the effect. It's actually one of the few times like where she kind of transforms into the ghost. That's kind of neat. But like the second I thought about this ending, I was like, well, wait, is she the founder? Is she one of that bloodline? Or is she the ghost wife reincarnated? How can she be all of these things at one moment in time?
The movie's not clear at all.
Yeah. This ending doesn't really hold up to any scrutiny at all once you really think about it. And also, I mean, they don't turn anybody else into ghosts like them. Also, why not just kill her? That's a great way to cast somebody to become a ghost.
The movie ends with Stevie broadcasting about the ghosts and the night everyone had. You see a pic of Elizabeth and the captain, and that's the movie.
Yeah. Nick throws the book into the journal into the water, and they try to move on. Like you said, that's it.
I guess he can move on with Stevie now.
Yeah, I guess he can. Now he can pick up that storyline and they can hide in all the freezers in case it comes back in the sequel.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but this is the most inconsequential remake we've covered. It doesn't really try to add anything new. It's a terrible script. The direction is pedestrian at best. I don't want to be that cruel about it, but it's certainly not a stylish film. And the acting is, well, the acting's bottom of the barrel. Tom Welling isn't very good. Maggie Grace is lousy. Selma Blair delivers a career worst performance. This is a one.
This is a one.
This is a one.
I was
going
to give it a one.
Yeah, you shouldn't even bother with this film.
One, because everybody showed up.
Yeah. Movie's in focus.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I was like, huh. I think I had a smirk at one point in the movie. You know, that was as close as I got to, like, laughter.
Yeah, but, you know, we're going to watch the original next week, and it'll be a much better movie.
Yes. That is the goal, for that to be a much better film.
Fucking Citizen Kane.
Yeah, we're going to love that movie because of how lousy this movie is, crummy how this movie is.
And we want to apologize for not watching that movie first.
Yeah, we should have done that. And then this is the only time we ever should have done it the old way, because we should have talked about John Carpenter's version for like an hour and then talked about this movie for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Instead, we've rambled on for like 40 minutes about this film.
All right. You ready for reviews?
Let's do it.
Reviews. 2.6 user review. 19% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I saw that earlier, the 19%.
And a 3.7 out of 10 on IMDb. And believe it, I found a 10-star review. Don't believe the bad reviews, people. Fog is exactly as advertised.
Okay.
Based on a handful of fog reviews, you'd think this movie killed people's children. It's a movie, people, and it was a good one. It was scary, wow, and it kept me entertained, and darn it if that's not all I'm looking for. I didn't even really know it was a remake, except for a couple kids in the rows around me saying over and over, this can't ever be as good as the original. So I got it. Remake City. Fine. I don't care. Looking for a cheap thrill and something to talk about with a girlfriend? Not looking for Citizen Kane or Frank Capra, looking for a movie which is, by its very own admission, is going to be cheap and shallow and scary. And, oh look, panties. So here's my 2 cents.
I looked away for 1 second to check the levels, and I come up and I hear, oh, panties. Like, what?
That literally was what he wrote.
Did I zone out for like 2 minutes? Is that what happened?
Good movie. Feel free to disagree, but you'll have to take yourself down a few dozen levels of movie snob to relate back to my argument. Christ. The script was a little cheesy, just like every horror movie you'll see this year and next.
Not really.
The acting was a little thin, which
a little wasn't thin?
At all that surprising.
Like Fiona Apple in 1997.
Plot holes? You betcha. Did they wreck the movie? No!
You can drive Fiona Apple through those plot holes.
Because it was still scary and still fun. The best parts were the direction of the action and the fog special effects. The movie has a few excellent car crashes. One that was really intense and purposeful, and one that was just a big bang, but it's still cool to watch because this one wasn't in every TV spot, so you didn't know it was coming. The ending that everybody seems to hate was just a good huh ending. Didn't pull punches or negate the last hour and a half. Once you see the final frame reveal the movie, work backwards, people. It all makes sense. Put it together piece by piece, small clue by small clue.
And so, do your own detective work when you watch a movie. Don't let the character figure it out before you do. You figure it out before them. You just yell the answer right on the screen.
And suddenly you'll be satisfied and even a little glad that the movie played with your mind a little. I don't like posting. Got a life to live. But all you guys, I love this review.
Yeah. He's like, you know what, losers?
He's on another level. Ugh. But all you guys need to relax a little. Did the people who made this movie say The Fog is the single greatest film in the history of the visual medium and deserves to be honored? Huh? Nobody.
Huh?
They didn't say much of anything except this is a scary movie and it's October. Go eat popcorn, so relax, and stop taking the movie and yourself so seriously. It was good.
Wow. That is the most delusional man we've ever talked to. Because it wasn't even just that. At the very end, he was like, you know, if you don't like it, you're a fucking snob bitch, so suck my dick. Like, that was his synopsis of everything. He's like, yeah, if you don't like the movie, you know what? You're on your fucking high horse, you asshole. It's like he just flipped you off and, like, ran away at the end of the review.
One of the best 10-star reviews I've ever read.
Yeah, that was a golden. That was golden. I love that.
Yeah.
So as you might have guessed, this film was hidden from critics. So Roger Ebert, even though he was very much alive, did not review this film.
Yeah.
He has no mention of it at all. And that's why they literally did not let critics see it. And Roger Ebert's like, I'm not paying my money to watch that piece of shit.
We watched a whole episode of freaking Ebert and Roper.
Yeah, we watched the worst of 2005 and it didn't get mentioned. That's why they just didn't see it. And once those reviews came in, like, I'm not going to pay to see that.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny, honestly, for Ebert, he shouldn't waste his time. There was only so many movies he could ever get to in his life. He shouldn't have wasted the 95 minutes on this film.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have wasted the 95 minutes on this movie.
Well, we'll never watch it again.
Exactly. We'll never watch it again, but we will watch John Carpenter's version next week, and we'll probably watch it over and over again. We'll probably watch this movie throughout the years. It's not my favorite Carpenter, but it's still good Carpenter.
Yeah. It's way better than this movie.
Way better than this movie. Guys,
I have a soft spot for it.
Yeah, you were there. I think this is a Carpenter movie you like more than I do.
I think so.
Yeah, this is a rare situation. And maybe I'll find something else. Now I'm going to sit down and watch it. That's the real benefit of the show, is actually watching and paying attention to every frame of a movie and seeing what's happening in it for the first time again.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I think is really amazing. But anyway, guys, come back next week, and we're going to talk about the much better version, John Carpenter's 1980 classic, The Thing.
Yep.
You're supposed to correct me. I said The Thing.
Oh, shit.
Ha! You weren't even listening! It's The Fog.
Yeah, I wasn't listening.
Yeah,
I'm already checked out.
Fired. Yeah, I know. You're ready to eat. All right, guys. See ya.